Call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order. Welcome, everyone. We have only one bill on our agenda today, but it's a nice meaty little bill that has been worked over thoroughly in the House. And so at this time, I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2067. Chris.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2067A assigns most income and corporate excise tax credits to one of three sunset dates, January 1st of 2014, 2016, or 2018. A couple of minor exceptions to that, but that's the theme. And then it also creates a default sunset date for future tax credits that would be 6 years after the credit is first effective, unless statute specifies a different date or states that no sunset date is required. And so in your handout, you have the SMS, you have a revenue impact, and it shows a revenue loss for a minimal impact in 2009-11, a revenue loss of about $20 million in 2011-13, and a revenue loss of $24 million in 2013-15, and a description of that revenue impact. And then you also have a handout that is a detailed table that received a lot of attention over on the House side, and it shows the three categories of the tax credits, and I think you're going to hear some testimony about how those groupings got assigned, but that's kind of a worksheet from which a lot of people have referred.
Okay, thank you, and we are very honored today to have the Chair of the House Revenue Committee and the Vice Chair of the House Revenue Committee with us to introduce this bill. So I would call Representative Barnhart and Representative Bailey. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11, including pieces of Eugene and all of Cresswell, Brownsville, and Coburg, and then some other areas around those spots. What I want to do is to introduce the concept that we're working with. The most important thing, I think, to be aware of is that we have no systematic way in Oregon for evaluating the tax expenditures. And this is a first, this is a piece of the tax expenditure total world. It only applies to tax credits on the income tax and the corporate tax system. It does not apply to property taxes, nor does it apply to any other aspect of the tax system, such as deductions or the federal exemptions or the other kinds of tax expenditures. Only this one area. And it's also important to note that the development of this bill comes out of the idea that the legislature ought to periodically review all of the tax expenditures. And of course, this is only part of the chore. The budget is reviewed and readopted every 2 years. Any item, except with very few exceptions, any item that doesn't make it back into the next two-year budget is gone. That applies to our schools, it applies to most of our healthcare system, it applies to the prison system, and it applies to most of the other aspects of state government of any size. But we don't have that system applying to the ways we expend money through the revenue process. And now, this bill would establish a six-year rotation for almost all of the tax credits. The ones it does not apply to are considered to be structurally part of the tax system. And you can check your reports to figure out exactly what those are. I'm not going to go into the detail of the bill, except to say it's my view that between us, the Finance and Revenue Committee and the House Revenue Committee, can, during the interims, actually do the reviews that are, in essence, established by this bill to get the kinds of evaluation of each of these tax credits that you need in order to know whether they should be continued, whether they should be modified in some way, whether they should be repealed, whether they're doing the job that they're supposed to do, or whether some other approach, either other than the tax credit or some modification of the tax credit, would result in a better outcome for the goal that the state has. Now I'm going to stop, and Representative Bailey is going to describe the details of the bill, and then we'll answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jules Bailey, and I have the honor of representing House District 42, and it is also my honor to be sitting here in front of my senator. So thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify. House Bill 2067 is about efficiency and about good government. And I think we need to call tax credits what they are. They are spending, and they're spending to achieve a goal. If we can think about the larger concept of a tax credit, the purpose of a tax credit seems to have, in our review of these, three basic functions. The first function is to induce a behavior of some kind. The second function is to compensate for an expense incurred when there is a public interest in abating that cost to some degree. And then the third kind of tax credit are tax credits that are fundamental to the structural operation of the tax system. We excluded that third category because, obviously, we want our tax system to function. And then zeroed in on those first two, with really the questions in mind of how do we create a system that regularly reviews the spending and these tax credits to make sure that do we still want to induce the behavior that we're trying to induce? Is there a better way that we could achieve it? Do we want to achieve more of it with that tax credit? Is there still a public interest in abating the expense that we're abating? And are there more cost-effective ways to achieve both? To date, Oregon hasn't had a regular process for achieving this kind of review, and that's what House Bill 2067 does. So if you look at the categories of the tax credits, what we've done is taken all of the tax credits that currently exist, excluding the third category, which I mentioned, those that are fundamental to the structure of the tax system, and such as the claim of right income. And 2067 does three things. First, it assigns sunsets to the tax credits that don't currently have a sunset. Second, it rearranges the sunsets on those that do have sunsets so that they're in three categories. They're loosely categorized together around, one, environment, agriculture, and business, two, community services, education, and housing, and three, family, child care, and medical. They're structured such that then the third thing that House Bill 2067 does is sets up a regular process for reviewing these every 6 years and a 6-year sunset on any new tax credits. This will allow the legislature to dig into each subject area and weigh the costs and benefits of each tax credit against each other one in that category and allow the legislature to really become an expert in that particular subject area and make a determination about the relative value of each tax credit. Now, in the debate on the floor, I had the honor of carrying the bill on the floor of the House. And in the debate on the floor of the House, we had a lot of good discussion about the value of certain particular tax credits. And we heard both during our working of this bill and during the testimony on the floor about people that felt that certain tax credits were extremely valuable. Let me be very clear. There are tax credits on this list that I will fight to keep, that I think are very valuable, and that I think should continue. Some of these tax credits, perhaps we might want to increase. Some of these tax credits, we might be able to achieve the same goals with a different method. But without the regular process to review them, we won't have the opportunity to make that determination. And when government spending is out of sight and out of mind, nobody benefits. The other principle that came up was whether or not we would exclude certain tax credits outside of that third category of structural tax credits. Again, this was a situation where we had a lot of discussion with stakeholders, and during the course of that discussion determined that if we were to exclude one tax credit, it was very difficult to justify not excluding another tax credit. So this bill puts a sunset on all tax credits, but let me be clear again, it does not take away any tax credits. No tax credit will end today because of House Bill 2067. So with that, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the representative and I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. And I want to thank you in particular for your hard work and your thoughtful consideration of these tax credits, and especially the way you group them together so that you can so that we can actually take a look at similar tax credits to be able to see the whole and see if the taxpayer is really getting their money's worth out of their investment in these various areas. I just wanted to, you know, we're already getting some pushback, obviously, from people who are defending various tax credits. And just for example, in the rural medical area, there's been a sense that the legislature might be sending a message that these are going to go away, which would hurt with recruiting to get people into the rural areas. And rural areas indeed are having a hard time recruiting, especially physicians out in rural areas. We hear about that every session. So I wonder if you would be willing to comment on that issue in particular.
Yeah. Yes. This issue came up on the House floor. One of the members raised a problem involving the credit involving rural physicians, and pointed out that the area that she represented had been having great difficulty finding physicians to come and settle there, and in fact had been working on it for 5 years to get that done. In my short comments on the floor on the bill, my response to that was, well, it appears as though this incentive wasn't sufficient to get that to get you to actually be able to hire a doctor for that area. Something else may need to be done. And I think that's precisely one of the values of a sunset like the ones we're proposing here, because it forces the legislature to look at the incentives that are being offered, whether they are the right incentives, whether they're aimed in the right place, and whether they're large enough to actually accomplish the goal that you have. I don't know of anyone in the legislature who doesn't support the placement of physicians in rural areas so that people living in rural areas can get the kind of medical treatment that they need and deserve. The question isn't, should we do that? The question, if there is one, always is how. And having a review of this kind of, in this way, is useful to help us answer that how question. One other comment. Every time we pass or maintain a tax credit, we are, in effect, determining that we'd rather spend the money this way than through the budget, because we only have so many tax dollars. If we don't collect them in the first place through a tax credit, we don't have them to spend in the budget. And so part of this is a matter of being able to review these things so that we can determine what the most effective way is to reach the goals, such as the goal of the rural medical credit. One other thing to be aware of, I think, is that setting these dates the way we have in 2014 for the first group, 16 for the second group, and 18 for the third group, the one that we're talking about is in the middle group, the 16 group. It's my plan to begin work on the review of the Environment, Agriculture, and Business group, that first group, not in 2013, the year before the expiration, but immediately in 2009, so that we can, some of these are easy to deal with. We'll deal with them quickly. We'll extend those credits to 2020, the next six-year period. Others may take a little more study, and we still have more time to get that done, because this committee has, these committees have fewer resources than Ways and Means does. Giving us the full 6 years to get it done is useful. But we, in fact, plan to get to deal with these issues in an expeditious way during the interim, with bills to be dealt with in the session in 10 or the session in 11, well before the expiration. And that would also be true, in my plan at least, for the next set that comes due in 16, so that we actually know several years ahead whether there is a problem that needs to be dealt with, whether there's something that should be changed in the credit, whether we ought to look at a different way of doing this and work with the Ways and Means process or the process of the substantive committees to deal with statutes in order to make changes, in order to make that happen. I would second what Representative Bailey said, too. To make this administration of the tax credit system work, you really need to include all of them. You can't exclude one here or one there, because every single one of these tax credits has important constituencies. People who support them can make arguments that theirs ought to be excluded, and while the others sort of stay in the bill. This way, we actually get a review of the entire process right along. Now, one last comment. If it appears to us in the process, and of course that would include this committee, that some of these tax credits, because of the nature of them, ought to have longer sunsets, there's no reason at all why the legislature can't consider and pass longer sunsets on those as those reviews occur.
Okay. Great. Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So good to see both my former chair and my predecessor here together. And so I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions, though. One is, I think anyone who's been through processes where there's a suggestion that tax credits are going to go away has never seen a hearing room fill up so fast or so full as those hearings. So, mm-hmm. And yet, when that's been tried before, I remember being on the Revenue Committee when Lane Shetterly held hearings like that, and virtually nothing was eliminated as a result, except for things that weren't being used anyway. So that's my first question, is what's the difference here? Why do you think this is going to actually result in some changes?
I think the key difference is that when you establish sunsets on bills, on a tax credit, it requires the legislature to either let the tax credit go or to act. You can't simply ignore it and it continues. This is an accountability bill, because it forces the legislature to be accountable to the taxpayers for the credits that we adopt. And it forces us to periodically review what those are, because if you don't review them, the sunset makes them go away. And I think that's the key difference between the situation that this bill would establish and the situation that Representative Chair Shetterly found himself in, 4-6 years ago.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, if I may, the scenario that you describe is, I think, one of the fundamental reasons that we've brought this bill forward, to create a scenario, as my chair describes, where the default is to have the sunset continue, and that requires a proactive vote. And in that way, there is a higher degree of scrutiny that is necessary in order to say, yes, this is a worthwhile tax credit and one that we want to continue or perhaps change or perhaps increase. And in the course of working on this bill, the proponents of a couple of different tax credits came and spoke with me and with members on the committee and advanced a number of arguments about why their tax credit was a very important tax credit. And my response was that that was exactly the kind of information that I was hoping to get and that we were hoping to get through this process. And I learned an enormous amount about, for example, reservation enterprise zone tax credits that I just hadn't known about before. It hadn't come up, and I learned an incredible amount about that tax credit and the value of it. And I think that's really the opportunity here also, is to allow folks to tell their story.
And a follow-up, Madam Chair. Thank you. I can imagine somebody might suggest that this would create instability or uncertainty, and that might make it more difficult to get businesses to invest. I don't know if you heard that on the House side, but I'd like you to respond to that, too.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, we did hear that on the House side, and one of the reasons that this is structured the way it is to allow a sufficient time lag to prevent distortion, or at least minimize distortion in the investment. You'll notice that the first credits don't sunset until 2014. After that, 2016, 2018, and then even going forward, there's a minimum of 6 years. So, if as Chair Barnhart were to suggested, we were to begin addressing these very quickly in the interim, There's likely even more than 6 years that will occur between this review, and that's a sufficient, my understanding at least, Madam Chair, Senator, is that that's a sufficient amount of time to prevent distortion in investments.
One other, if I may, Madam Chair, Representative Senator Rosenbaum. Boy, I slipped there, didn't I? Much more used to you in that other role. The bill is structured in such a way that multi-year tax credits are dependent upon the year in which they begin. So that if there is a multi-year tax credit where a certificate is issued and the result of it is that there's a five-year period after that, it's the year the certificate is issued that determines the balance of the program. So even if the sunset were to occur, the balance of that particular credit would continue anyway through its end. And if you look at the way the bill is drafted, I think uniformly it's drafted that way. So those multi-year, by the very nature of them, multi-year ones actually what you're sunsetting is the authorization of them, not the ending of them.
Madam Chair, may I add one point to that? Very briefly, when we look at some of the incentives that we create through our tax system, for example, an enterprise zone tax abatement. An enterprise zone tax abatement in many places is as little as 3 or 5 years, and that's sufficient to induce investment with that sort of lead time. We're looking at 6 years here, even longer, so that'll be hopefully long enough to prevent distortion.
And one final comment, if I may. There are, as you know, many, many bills that routinely have very short sunset dates on them. One that comes to mind because we dealt with it recently is the one having to do with the forest practices tax. And I'm not sure I'm getting the name right, but that one sunsets every 2 years. Every 2 years, the legislature reenacts it with new numbers. And we continue to fund the Oregon State University Forest Research Department, and we continue funding other aspects of forest management, even though there's a two-year sunset on it. I mean, the legislature is perfectly capable of managing sunsets on topics that have important implications for the state. And I would expect there to be no difference with this one, except that we have more time before the sunset occurs to deal with them.
Thank you. Are you done?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Hatz.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for your work on this. Representative Barnhart knows that I've been interested in this issue for years. My question is, on some of these, the sunset was actually moved forward to fall into your categories, and I'm starting to come off because of that. I don't, you know, why you would extend some sunsets here, and why on some of these where there are no sunsets, the date was moved to 2018 or so far out. Why, you know, if the idea is to put a hard date here, maybe not today or next year, but I don't think 2014 is unreasonable, why not just put that date and then make the constituencies for these come and make the case and see what happens? Why so far out? Why extend those? In fact, it's so far extended that in these outlined biennia, we have negative revenue years. So I just don't get that.
Madam Chair, Senator Hess, that's a fantastic question. And we struggled with a number of different ways of structuring the bill so that we could find the most logical way to approach the rolling review of the tax credits. We tried out a number of different mechanisms, including looking at a magnitude of the tax credits, trying to provide a way that each biennium there was a regular predictable set of credits that would come up that would be somewhere in the neighborhood of the same kind of amount of work each biennium. This ended up being, we thought, for the long run and taking the long view, the most logical way to set up the review, simply because it allows for your committee and yourself and the legislature to really understand the trade-offs between these credits, to categorize them by subject. And it also happened that when a few of the miscellaneous credits were put in, that we actually have relatively close to a similar dollar size reviewed each cycle as well throughout these. I share your concern that some of these credits that we have pushed the sunset back on, I can't speak for my chair, but in my case, I felt that that was a worthwhile trade-off to achieve a structure that was logical and that had a long-run staying power.
Let me add to that, if I may, Madam Chair, Senator Hass. You're right that a number of these were set forward. Also, there are also some that were set back to an earlier date in order to make these categories work on a subject matter basis. A couple of things to be aware of is that if we do these reviews, as we're talking about early, and we come upon one of these credits that we decide is not meeting its purpose, is not effective, then it is still possible for the legislature to repeal that tax credit in 10 or 11 or 12 or whatever year we're holding a session. So these sunset dates are not hard and fast in the sense that they restrict the legislature's capacity to make a change earlier than that if sufficient numbers are persuaded that that ought to happen.
Madam Chair.
Please follow up.
But we can do that now. We now have the power to repeal any of these.
Yes.
We have lacked the political will to do that because every time we try to do that, whether it's subsidies for oyster growing, we fill the room with oyster farmers.
Right.
And it just is just a politically difficult chore. And that's why I've always thought this was the way to do it if you were going to do that. And then make the oyster farmers come forward, just as people and agencies have to do in Ways and Means, and be subjected to the same kind of scrutiny in terms of what the criteria is, how many jobs are created, and all of these other things. And that's what I think the value of doing this would be. I just, you know, this actually costs the state more money in doing this if you go out to 2013 and 2015. So I think we'll have to maybe talk some more about these, extending these as opposed to trying reining them in.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senator Hass, we have to recognize that the revenue estimate on a bill like this assumes that the sunset is actually going to end the life of the credit. I suspect that this really is, and I hope that this really is, an aid to administration. It is not a backwards attempt to actually repeal these tax credits. Some of them, I expect, will go away because we determine we don't need them, they're not fulfilling their purpose, or they're too expensive and we need to do something else. But I would expect that in 15 years' time, if you were to look at this list, again, most of these that are listed here would still remain on the books. And there probably would be a few others. But some of them would be modified because of the regular ongoing review process. I agree completely with your comment that we should be reviewing these just like the Budget Committee reviews the budget.
Thank you. And nothing in this bill would prohibit the legislature from repealing any of these tax credits at any time, which we now have the authority to do. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct. And if there's obviously also the dynamic of the different bars that are necessary, whether it sunsets or whether we decide to repeal it now.
Correct. Okay. So basically, it's as much a matter of perception as anything. I mean, I think if something goes in without a sunset, then it becomes a de facto entitlement. And do you see that as being the case?
Madam
as well?
Chair, that I think is the perception. When you have a tax credit like that, we tend not to look at it. It just goes on. It's part of the background, like the wallpaper. You don't ever see it unless you actually think about paying attention to it. Whereas that forest bill that I was describing gets attention every session because it has a sunset every session. But it always gets reenacted.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we will start our testimony. We'll start with Michael Kudulik from the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians. And then we'll take that phone guy. He came from 100 miles.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the committee, Michael Hodulik.
Sorry, mispronounced your name.
Very good, though. Yeah, I represent the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians, also personally from Florence, Oregon. So Florence, Oregon, it's a city along the coast, full of retirement population, so it's a very geriatric community. So meaning we have a lot of Medicare population, also a service industry catering to that, so a very Medicaid population. So the demographics of the payers are essentially one-third Medicare, one-third Medicaid. That's a very high population of our payer mix. Also with that, it's approximately 10% private pay or charity care. So that leaves only 23 to 24% of third-party payer, actually real paying insurance. So our income is not as well paid as the I-5 corridor. So recruitment is difficult, and this is something that you're probably well aware of. Why is it hard to recruit physicians to rural communities, whether it's the Oregon coast, Central Oregon, Eastern Oregon? In our case, it's exactly the demographics of our town. So I know it's very difficult to carve out a rural provider's tax credit, as the two representatives were alluding to, but it could be crippling in a town like Florence, and I'm sure very many other communities along the coast. So $5,000 may not seem like a lot of money, but that is what the rural provider tax credit is. It's a valuable recruiting tool. It's a valuable retention tool. We have lost 6 providers in the last 5 years. That's hard. I have talked to our recruiter yesterday, and she says it costs $50,000 to $55,000 to recruit a new provider. You just can't keep doing that every year to replace these providers and then have them leave. We've finally gotten a little better stability on our provider force, but this is a very difficult situation we're in. I heard efficiency mentioned. I also heard instability. And that, in the medical profession, there is a lot of uncertainty in medicine. And uncertainty when it comes to the tax credit is not necessarily a good thing. It's something that could be stable. And I think that is would be something that if it's on the table, it's something that is something we can rely on. It would definitely mean stability, and that is something that would be very good for the retention and recruitment to all rural providers. It's not a bad place to practice medicine. I think providers that are in a rural community are there for a reason. They like small towns. It's a great place to raise your families. It's a great place to practice medicine. I think my partners, I think we all enjoy being there. I think we're all very good physicians. As I tell my medical students that come there, you'll get good medical care. You will not find bad physicians in a rural town. You can't hide in a small town. And the quality of medicine is phenomenal. But if we can't get them there, we can't practice medicine. As of 2 weeks ago Wednesday at our staff meeting, there were 972 patients on a waiting list that were waiting to get providers. And that's a town of 8,000. People keep moving in. Florence is a wonderful place to live. But if you can't find a provider, it's a hard place to live. The Rural Providers Tax Credit is an important part of the recruiting tool. It's an important part of retention. I was talking to one of the doctors in Reedsport. He was saying he's been there as long as I have. We've both been there 17 years in our respective communities. in not one time in those 17 years have we not been recruiting. We're always recruiting. It's never ending. And it's an important piece of this. It's not just efficiency. It's inefficiency of having to re-recruit. It's uncertainty. That's not a comfortable spot when you're a medical provider. It's not just the physicians. It's the nurse practitioners. It's the nurse anesthetists. These are all the people that provide care in their rural communities. It's an important part of our livelihood. It's raising our families. We like it there. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Well, thank you. And first of all, I want to thank you for, number one, being in family medicine, and number two, being in a rural area, because my whole time in the legislature, we keep confronting this situation, which is a crisis in some communities, where there just is not, specifically, not enough physicians. We've changed scope of practices, laws, in this legislature to let physician assistants do things in rural areas that because of the lack of physicians. And so I think there's a high degree of awareness. But to be perfectly honest, I just learned four or five things I didn't know about the rural tax credit and about Florence. And I'm just wondering, if in your recruitment, do you present these tax credits as a permanent entitlement to these folks who come?
It's part of the package. We mention it as far as it being permanent. Thus far, it has been. So, yeah, we mention it that it's we've been getting it every year.
That's true. But do you let them know that, for example, the budget situation we're in now, I mean, we're going to be cutting all kinds of things. The rural tax credit could fall on the chopping block this session. There's nothing to stop the I'm not saying we're going to do it, because there's a high degree of understanding in this building of the value of this credit, or at least the purpose of this credit. But it's not an entitlement. It is a tax credit that could be repealed at any time, and I'm just wondering if the people who get it understand. And do you get it yourself, you and
yes,
your partners?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So it's an ongoing.
Yes. And I recall, being in the 90s when it was in the sunset phases, and we're always scared every year. Is it going to get sunset? And that was always scary times.
It never did, though, did
and
it?
And thankfully it didn't.
Yeah. So. Yes. So that's a difficulty, is that, and that really gets to the crux of how these tax credits work. People start to interpret them as entitlements, as ongoing entitlements, but we have a constitutional provision in this state that one legislature can't commit another legislature. So there's no way we could put in a tax credit and put it in as a permanent entitlement, because that would tie the hands of a future legislature. So you're in that situation. What this would do is just simply force a review of it. And if you're having that much trouble recruiting and losing that many people, then I'm wondering if you need to reshuffle the tax credit, maybe more aimed toward physicians and, maybe saving money somewhere else where this is used. I mean, that would be a question I would have if you came up for a sunset. I'd say, why isn't this working better? Why, what could we do to make it work better?
If I may. Well, as I heard you all say, that wouldn't preclude this being reviewed, whether it was on the sunset chopping block or not. But the uncertainty of having it sunset or not wouldn't preclude somebody else coming up with another proposal of having that looked at.
Right. Okay, other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. We have somebody, actually I think I'll take the actual people who are here first, and then we'll take the gentleman from Klamath Falls. Scott Ekblad.
Oh, Good afternoon.
To the committee.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad. I'm the director of the Oregon Office of Rural Health. And I'm here to talk a little bit about the Rural Providers Tax Credit Program. I believe the official name is the Oregon Rural Medical Practice Tax Credit Program, and that's probably because when this program began in 1989, it was primarily aimed at physicians. So just a few, excuse me, I forgot to hand in my material.
Oh.
So the tax credit began originally with physicians, physician assistants, and nurse practitioners, so the primary care providers in rural communities. In 1991, the statute was amended to include nurse anesthetists, and in 1995, podiatrists and dentists were added, and then optometrists were added in 97. So, as you can imagine, every time this program was amended or changed or tweaked in any way, the eligibility criteria are slightly different for different groups, and so it works a little bit differently for different professions. And I'm not going to go into that level of detail here, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about that. The program is administered by the Office of Rural Health. We accept the applications for participation. We do our best to make sure that folks out in rural communities know that the program exists. I doubt that there are very many that don't know about the program. Every year we ask the recipients to send in information to determine that they are, again, eligible for the credit. So, in other words, they have to be re-verified every year. One thing that you may not know is that when the program began in 1989, it was for a maximum of 10 years. So, in other words, if a physician came on, he could only get the tax credit for 10 years. And if someone else started 2 years later, it would be 10 years after that. And so this program was actually reviewed in 1999, and it was determined by the legislature at that time that it was too valuable a tool for it to stop after 10 years or for the uncertainty to remain. And so the sunset was lifted and the 10-year limit was lifted in 1999. The statute that allows this tax credit does not explicitly state a purpose, but I think that we can presume the purpose is to encourage the establishment and continuation of healthcare practices in underserved areas. In the 2007 tax year, there were a total of 1,833 people who qualified for the tax credit, the vast majority of them, over 1,100 of them, being physicians. I just want to close by saying that I do not disagree on a philosophical basis with the concept of reviewing tax credits on a regular basis. But I do think that this program is a surprise. I think this program is different and is an exception. But I think it's different because, for example, the other health-related tax credits that are included in this bill, those are really for people in a different circumstance. We are an importer of physicians and other healthcare providers to the state. We don't produce enough to meet our demands, and so we're really using this as just one tool. It's not a silver bullet, but it's one tool to try and convince people to pull up their roots, move to Oregon, rural Oregon specifically, and to begin their families' lives in those communities. And so that's why I think that the relatively greater certainty of not having a sunset on this particular program is valuable. I would be more than happy to have a mandated review before the legislature on a regular basis. But the message that it sends to the providers that there's an actual sunset on the benefit is something different. So I'll just throw that out there and hope you might consider achieving the purpose of a review without actually having a sunset for the credit. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Since 1999, has the situation improved in the rural area in terms of being able to recruit and retain physicians and other medical people, or has it gone down?
Well, you know, one of the other issues Madam Chair, that the legislature is considering this session is data collection to help us answer exactly those sorts of questions. So what I'm going to give you in response is really just sort of gut-level anecdotal information. We don't have the statistical analysis, really, that we wish we did. But it just so happens that I started in the Office of Rural Health 17 years ago as the recruiter. One of the functions of our office is to help recruit people to relocate and practice in rural Oregon. And it was a very, very difficult time then. I think that we are in about the same spot, if not a larger looming crisis today than we were at the time.
And is the crisis equally distributed among all the people who qualify? Like, is it worse for physicians or worse for optometrists, or is it about the same for everybody in terms of your issues?
Again, Chair Burdick, I'm not sure I can give you a statistical response to that, a statistical answer to that. There are, in some professions, standard ratios of how many providers you need for the population. Family practice, for example, it's pretty much standard to think that you need about one family practice physician for every 2,000 to 2,500 people. Not so much the case for dentistry or optometry, et cetera, et cetera.
And when you are recruiting someone, do you present this as an entitlement, as something that will not go away?
We present it as a benefit that does not have a sunset, yes.
So you basically... Do you let them know that the legislature has the authority every session to change it, repeal it, reduce it, whatever?
We don't state that specifically. I think that's pretty much an assumption. I mean, the legislature can do any number of things on its own every session.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Jody Weiser and Marcia Kelly. Thank you, guys. Are you guys together? Yeah. Welcome.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, this is one of those good bill do pass statements without any exceptions. Everything we spend money on needs to be reviewed, even our best
Jody,
of things.
Jody, you forgot to identify yourself.
I'm sorry, Jody Weiser. Tax Fairness, Oregon. The bill proposes that any new legislation that comes forward is on a six-year cycle, and this legislation actually puts every bill between a five and a nine-year. I mean, it's first reviewed either 5 years from now or 9 years, as far as 9 years from now. You might change that to do a test run on making it effective between now and 2014 when the bill starts, because there is no mechanism in this bill for how you're going to review these tax expenditures. And we've got 10 bills before us this year that are sunsetting, 10 pieces of legislation that are sunsetting, and I bet you that most people in this building could not name those 10 bills because those 10 sunsetting pieces of tax expenditures because there hasn't really been any review of them. And yet they are on a review cycle. So I think if we're really going to make this bill effective, we've got to figure out what's the review process that we use to make it effective, or it'll be just like the 10 that are up this year, the only one of which I've really heard significant conversation about was the historic property tax credit, and the rest of them seem to, there's been no discussion. So certainly we need to move forward with starting to look at how we spend all of our money, whether it's received or not received. And I think working on what the mechanism for review was going to be, either through some practice run with a few bills or by writing something and adding it to this bill, either one would be a good idea. And finally, I want to give an example. The Business Energy Tax Credit is set up as a tax credit rather than a grant program. And in fact, what we're doing is spending a lot of money. About 73% of our money in some cases goes to our purpose, and the rest goes to whoever bought the tax credit. So we're using taxpayer money rather inefficiently. And that's the kind of thing where you need to look and see, should we be doing it differently? And probably we should be giving schools and municipalities grants, just as the federal government has decided to do, rather than tax credits. And the kind of review process that you've set up for here will help that kind of review happen. So I'm very hopeful that this will pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, Marcia Kelly from the American Association of University Women of Oregon. And as AUW, we have been working on educating our members about the uses of tax credits and deductions since at least 2001, since that's when I started coming to the revenue committees.
Lucky you.
This is the first year I didn't sit through all of the information on where taxes come from and where taxes go. I figured after five sessions I had at least a general idea. This seems like a very sensible way to set up a formula to look at tax credits by grouping them together into similar activities so that you can become pretty pretty educated about that. And it also sets up a look at every tax credit, which I think is very good. I was testifying in the House last week on the plug-in cars, the electric plug-in cars, and a tax credit of up to $5,000 for an electric plug-in car. And in doing research for that testimony, I just looked at what hybrid cars' owners' profiles looked like. Hybrid cars, love those little Priuses. I don't drive one, but I've ridden in them. They're nice. 79% of the people who buy hybrid cars earn $100,000. Most of them would probably buy the Prius without the $5,000 tax credit. Those are just sort of examples. That's still in the law, so that might be something you could look at if the bill comes across to you. But those are examples of things that really do need to be looked at to see if we're using our tax credits for the purpose that they were intended. And sorry about this, Prius owners, the 79% that make over $100,000, instead of just maybe incentivizing people to buy the newest and latest toy. When you're talking about rural medical practices, one of the other things that I learned by spending time at the legislature was there's a difference between frontier medicine and rural medicine. And if you're going to look at these sorts of tax credits, you might look and see how it is defined. And they are defining for this purpose rural as being an area at least 10 miles from a major population center of 40,000 or more. To me, that's not always rural. And I think that we could maybe get a better bang for our buck if we looked at what we considered rural, if we're going to extend this medical practice tax credit. In addition to that, I think that there are probably reasons why they're having a hard time recruiting doctors. I have a young friend who is just going into residency. She spent 4 years at OHS, 5 years at OHSU doing the MD public health dual program. She's expecting to come out of OHSU with a $250,000 debt. And I think that until we figure out how we fund getting our citizens into medical practices and nursing programs without coming out with huge debts, we're going to continue to have a difficulty in recruiting physicians to small areas, that and looking at the way that we compensate them. And I know that we can't do anything probably about compensating, but we can ask our federal legislators to look at how compensation is done for medical practitioners in Oregon, because we are low on the reimbursement rate. This is a good bill. The approach to the bill is, I think, sensible. And I can go back and tell my members who every year at convention say, are we getting a handle on tax expenditures yet? Because at our convention down in Seaside, we had 45 of our members who were there, probably about 130 members there, who sat through a whole afternoon of explanation about tax expenditures. We need to spend our state money wisely, and this is an expenditure.
Thank you very
Any
much.
Questions?
Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Oh, a whole afternoon on tax benefits. Was your speaker Senator Hass?
Actually, it was Steve Novick. So,
okay.
Very entertaining.
All right. Now we're going to stand at ease for half a second while our good staffer here gets Bob Marcelli from Klamath Health Partnership on the phone.
I get that number too.
Hold two of them.
Hello, this is Bob Marcelli.
Mr. Marcelli, this is Ginny Burdick, and I'm chair of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. And we are ready to take your testimony on House Bill 2067A.
Great. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak with you today.
Welcome to the committee. Can you identify yourself for our record, please?
As best I can, I will. My name is Bob Marcelli. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Klamath Health Partnership, located in Klamath County, Oregon. We are a federally qualified community health center operating one rural and two frontier clinics in an underserved, medically underserved area.
Great. Okay, your testimony.
Well, I wanted to say that I appreciate the opportunity to speak today, largely because I've been approached by four of my providers on this issue in particular with a great sense of urgency. One, a doctor of osteopathic medicine, who we were successful in recruiting to our underserved area precisely because of this opportunity to have a tax credit. And it was a package of incentives that brought her here from Los Angeles, where she was doing quite well in private practice. But believing that there was a need in a rural part of Oregon and wanting to relocate, this gave us a competitive advantage. I also have three physician assistants who work for me. They tell me that on a routine basis, they're recruited aggressively by very much wealthier private practices and group practices in urban Oregon and other parts of the Northwest. And one of the things that keeps them here, in addition to the quality of life that we enjoy, is the opportunity to benefit from practicing medicine in this environment and the tax credit that they are provided. It helps keep them here, and retention is very important to us. Currently, there are efforts underway in Klamath County that perhaps the committee and others in the legislature have heard about, where we're working better together collaboratively on an aggressive recruitment and retention effort. We want to become a recruitable community, and we want to fund aggressively ways to help offset the cost of indebtedness to students who choose to practice in Klamath County. And it would be unfortunate if this were a tool taken away from us just as we're getting started with a promising program of not only recruiting but retaining the healthcare workforce that we have in place presently. So those are the kinds of things I just wanted to offer to you as you consider these things, very practical things when you're in a county like Klamath, where we anticipate losing another 10 healthcare providers to more lucrative and attractive urban markets in Oregon and in other parts of the country in the next 1 to 2 years.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Mark Hess has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob, is your clinic in Klamath Falls?
Yes, it is. Our main clinic site is in Klamath Falls, Senator.
Like downtown?
It's right downtown. And downtown is in a city of approximately 25,000 people. The county itself is 65,000, where our county is the size of the state of Rhode Island. The other clinics we serve are in Bly, which is 50 miles east of Klamath Falls, and Chiloquin, which is 26 miles north of Klamath Falls.
Follow up, please.
Follow up, please.
Well, I guess that's my point there in that when I think rural, I don't think of downtown Klamath Falls. It's a great community, but you have Safeways and Fred Meyer's and Main Streets and stoplights. Bly, maybe. And Chiloquin, maybe. And I think this is the kind of thing that sort of, you know, begs for a periodic review as to, okay, what's rural and what isn't. And, you know, frankly, I know a lot of people who would prefer a smaller community like Klamath Falls over Portland, and especially Southern California. It should almost be you have to pay something to leave Southern California to come to a place like Klamath Falls. So just, I guess, more of a comment than anything else.
So, Mr. Marsali, you use the tax credit both for your practice in Klamath Falls and in Chiloquin and in Bly?
Any provider who wishes to apply for it can and does.
Okay, and what would you say is the average? I mean, do people tend to come and stay for a long time, or is there a group of them leave out after a period of years? What is the pattern with people who come with the incentive of this tax credit?
Well, I think most come because not only do they have a tax credit afforded them, but also because of the quality of life that's afforded them here in a rural community. And we fight and struggle hammer and tong to keep the amenities that we do have. The senator has mentioned a couple of them, and we're proud of those accomplishments, and we're often overlooked by those types of enterprises. In addition, we're often overlooked by mid-level practitioners and physicians who are looking for other kinds of amenities, and I think anything that we can do to keep people here is to our advantage. So, well, there are a couple of reasons why people stay, and there are a couple of reasons why people leave, and I know people who've stayed because they are induced to stay economically through a tax credit such as the one we're discussing today.
But what period of time do people tend to stay? Do they tend to stay and spend their whole career there? Or do
you
they...
know, I think demographically what I find is a greater level of mobility among the younger and more recent graduates of medical school and residency programs and physician assistants and nurse practitioner programs. So I'm seeing some of that. Some of the changes in staying or relocating are affected by indebtedness. One of your folks talked about that earlier. Patterns of practice change, things of that sort. So there are as many variables as there are people.
Mm-hmm. And do you present when you are recruiting? Do you present this as something that can never go away?
Oh, heavens no, that would be false, because the federal 330 grant that we receive very clearly states that the federal government, Bureau of Primary Health Care, the Health Resources Services Administration, can rescind the grant at any time for any reason. So, no, we would never make a promise that we couldn't keep, but mm-hmm. we certainly present it as an actual benefit and an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you feel if you're the people you recruit knew that they could count on it for, say, a period of 5 years, that would give them enough security to go ahead and make the move?
I'm absolutely convinced it would be one more reason for them not to look elsewhere, to mm-hmm. practice elsewhere.
Okay.
And today we have 15,000 residents of rural Klamath County who have no access to an established primary care provider and who must seek health care from the emergency room. And this is a phenomenon that is unique to rural Oregon and not broadly experienced in the urban parts of our state.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much for joining us and for being so easily accessible when we called.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, is there anybody else out there who wants to testify on this bill? Mr. Craven. Dr. Craven? Is this Dr. Craven?
I'm the only non-doctor testifying.
Thank you, Jim Craven, representing Tech America. Madam Chair, members of the committee, real briefly, having been a participant in many of these discussions over the years, I just had a couple of observations. One, we support the bill, so I want to say that right up front. We think it is reasonable in scope and that it's doable. There was some discussion over on the House side of, you know, asking your committees to review every tax expenditure in that big, thick book, and I think I testified over there that we want to be careful we don't kill your staff in the process of trying to look at all that, you know, every one of those, every biennium. There is that process. You have that gross examination, and you do have a book with all that in it at sort of the 10,000-foot level. I think looking at Oregon only tax credits, I think there's only 50 on this list, and you spread it out over a, you know, some reasonable period of time, it does give you an ability to sort of get at this issue in some kind of reasonable scope. And so I think that's positive. I've only worked on a couple of tax credits over my 20 years here, two or three really, different ones. They've always had sunsets. Most of the large ticket items, if you look at this list and compare the none versus the dates, the ones that really have real money have traditionally had, in most cases, with the exception of the personal exemption credit that we're not even going to put on this list, have had sunsets. So, I mean, some have had them, some have not, but the big ticket items generally people have had to come back on a reasonable process, usually 4 to 6 years, and make their case. This process, just to remind you of one example where a process just like this really did result in something, was everybody's favorite whipping boy, the pollution control tax credit. It was either 99 or 2001. I can't remember which. Governor Kitzhaber was governor at the time.
97, 99.
Well, I mean, it was every session, but there was the penultimate session where a pending renewal was up, and the legislature and Governor Kitzhaber used that sort of gun at the head to significantly rewrite that program and actually write sort of off into the sunset into that final renewal. That credit is essentially gone today. So this process of having the gun at your head focuses people did result in that one example of a significant change to a significant tax credit. And so I think the points that have been made here today that this is just not a binary decision. Okay, let's have the hearing whether we renew it or not. Could actually be an occasion to look at it, to improve it, to make it bigger sometimes. I mean, maybe a few years from now, the rural health tax credit will be judged not enough to be a good, you know, motivation, and maybe you'd want to increase it. So, you know, I think that's all good, and it's a healthy conversation, and, you know, we're willing to be part of it. My final point is it's not exactly tongue-in-cheek, but it's just something that I'll probably get in trouble for saying, but I think government in general, the spending side, we're always saying that, you know, spending gets all the scrutiny, but tax credits sort of slide by. Sunsets for state programs and state agencies and state expenditures might be an interesting thing to throw into the mix. And I only say that's slightly tongue-in-cheek. But I think looking at all dollars, we do have this sort of essential budget level. Quite frankly, we do look at money above the line in the ways and means process in general. And it is just, it would be hard to look at that whole tax expenditure book every biennium and make informed judgments. It is hard to look at every dollar in the budget, you know, zero-based budgeting from zero, and look at all that every session in the ways and means process. But anyway, I think it's a healthy debate, and we support the bill.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Craven. Anybody else out there? Okay. Well, thank you. We will continue to consider this bill, and I fully expect to bring it back. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2067, and I will announce to the committee that we get Monday off again. We've got other forms of debate we'll be doing during that time, and we are adjourned.